You are listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast, where we aim to dispel the myths, debunk the stories, and help people better understand the role of the doula in the 21st century. I am your host, Sophie Brigstock, owner of Nurturing Birth and course facilitator, and I invite you to grab a cuppa, pop on your headphones, and listen in as I chat to doulas, birth keepers, and nurturing birth friends about all things perinatal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast. I'm Sophie Brigstock. I am so excited to have not one, but two of our fabulous Nurturing Birth Doulas with us today. And I am going to hand over to them to introduce themselves. So we've got the lovely Sam Shepherd and Victoria White. Sam, do you want to let us know who you are and why you're here?
Yeah, of course. I'm Sam Shepherd. You can find me, some people know me as the unapologetic doula online. I'm a doula, a course facilitator, and now heading into the world of exploring neurodivergent birth and what that looks like. Yeah, and I'm based in Essex.
Fantastic. Thank you. Yes. So Sam is our lead course facilitator at Nurturing Birth. So I keep her very, very busy running doula courses. And Victoria, tell us who you are.
So yeah, I'm Victoria White. I'm based in the northeast of Scotland, which is where Sam and I are today, working on my kitchen table. And I trained as a doula with Nurturing Birth in 2020. During the pandemic on the distance course, and I worked then at the time I was living in France, so I worked in Paris supporting mainly people in the expat community there as they embarked on becoming new parents. And we're now back in Scotland as a family, and I am very excited to be a Nurturing Birth mentor now as well for other doulas. And Sam and I are now working together on neurodivergent birth. So neurodivergent birth is a new enterprise aimed at sort of understanding some of the key challenges that neurodivergent people can experience perinatally, increasing awareness and understanding around those so that we can better support those people in pregnancy, birth and beyond.
Amazing. And I think there's been a huge gap, hasn't there, around supporting neurodivergent people. I'm really interested to explore kind of what brought you both to this place, like why have you decided to dive in and start exploring how better people could be supported?
Yeah, well, I guess I first started thinking about this myself from quite a personal point of view, which probably isn't an unusual story, but I have two children, and my eldest was diagnosed as autistic, and she has ADHD as well. And, you know, around about the time that I was kind of starting my doula work. So I became very fixated on two things, all things birth and all things neurodivergence, as I learned about understanding her and how to better support her. It's not an unusual story then that I sort of saw a lot of her experiences were reflecting how I had experienced childhood, and I started to look into my own neurodivergence as well, which is still kind of a journey that I'm on. And it's amazing now to have some real self-awareness around sort of the past in childhood and growing up, but also how I respond to things now, some of the challenges I have, and how I can support myself and ask for the help that I need. I think from a birth point of view, I realized that there was this huge gap. You know, I was reading a lot about birth and inclusivity around birth on lots of different topics, but there wasn't really anything talking about how we can understand the neurodivergent experience of birth. And really, the, you know, pregnancy, birth and early parenthood can be very challenging for anybody. Mm. But I think some of those challenges are really magnified for neurodivergent people, particularly from a sensory point of view, issues with communication, and many neurodivergent people experience high levels of anxiety, and this can become a really prominent factor perinatally. So I decided to create an Instagram account around this topic, and there was an amazing response to it. And that's when Sam and I started talking about her experiences as well. And yeah, perhaps Sam wants to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have been talking about it within Nurturing Birth, our lovely core team, for quite a bit. Yeah. I think for me, it's been known what to say and how to say it and how to keep it, you know, obviously bringing my own personal journey into it, but also being mindful that every person's really different and what that might look like. And, you know, and I had a big, big kind of shift regarding, do I need to be like trained? Do I need to be medical? Do I need to understand it on a psychiatrist? Like, but, you know, having the tools via lived experiences with my own children and myself, then that has been the biggest thing for me, actually, is that we're all going to know things via our own experiences and what it means to us. So kind of opening up that individualized support was really key as well. So yeah, when Victoria put a thing out there, I actually think you were the first person I contacted, so it was like, wrap it. I wanted to do something like this. Someone else is. It's Victoria, so I'm just going to speak to her. So yeah, it's sort of embracing my own nervousness around it, but then being brave enough to just step out and say, look, I really love what you're doing. If you need a hand, not I have to be really careful, because I'm always like, pick me, I'll help you. but whilst being open, say, look, if you need anything, I'm here, I totally get it. And I think I left Victoria a very long-winded, garbled message about my journey and whatnot else. And so yeah, then it's like, yeah, let's just roll with it and see where it goes. So there's been it's been lovely, because from my side, as a facilitator and who's opened up about stuff, you know, pre-course, post-course, through the courses, conversations we've had within the team. And, you know, you're right, there has been a massive gap for it, you know, and that's not devaluing any other group that struggles. You know, it's great that Black, Asian, minority groups, LGBTQIA plus groups and more are all coming to the fore. And, you know, even people with physical disabilities, it's easier to see. You don't want to assume, but it's easier to see if someone's in a wheelchair or struggling speaking or something. But I think for me, with these sort of hidden things that people mask or hide or not or feel ashamed about, that really sort of lit my fire that, you know, I want to make it easier for people.
Yeah.
So they don't feel judged or excluded or be something that they're not. I mean, that's my name, right? Unapologetic. They need to be who they need to be. So that was really, really important. So
Okay, so for me, I think what would be really, really useful in this conversation is to kind of do lesson 1.1, which is what do you mean by neurodivergence? Like, what comes up when you talk about neurodivergent people?
Yeah. I think the term neurodiversity was first sort of properly spoken about in, I think it was the 90s, not that long ago, by an autistic sociologist called Judy Singer. Mm-hmm. And her kind of message was that neurodiversity is exactly that. It's the diversity in the range of brain function, and, you know, that like all kinds of diversities should be celebrated and understood and not marginalized. I think I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Sam, so don't let me just say this, but I think when we talk about neurodivergence or neurodivergent people, we do tend to sort of use that as a term to refer to people who might have what's known as a neurodevelopmental condition. And some of the better known ones would be autism, ADHD, Tourette's, things like dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, but also, you know, to some extent, people who really, really struggle with anxiety and other mental health conditions as well. So any sort of deviation, I don't want to use the word normal, but any sort of deviation from what we would term like the neurotypical experience. And that's what makes it sometimes quite a complicated topic, because the range of diversity is so huge, and it's difficult sometimes, I think, to capture that. So for example, Sam and I are working on a workshop for birth workers, and the aim of that workshop is to help birth workers to understand some of the key challenges that neurodivergent people have perinatally, but with a huge kind of caveat through the whole thing that everybody is an individual. You know, we can't just say that this is what it's like to be neurodivergent. There are often some key themes around communication, as I said before, and sensory things. But yeah, there's every neurodivergent person is an individual, and everyone has very different experiences. So that makes it quite complex, but also like fascinating. And
yeah, well, the brain is just so fascinating, isn't it? I mean, it's so complex, the brain. So, you know, there must be many, many, many more areas of neurodivergence than we even know at this point. I can't imagine what's going to kind of emerge over the next decade or more.
And they think, you know, they reckon that something like 15-20% of people in the population are neurodivergent in one, you know, one shape or another, and that's massive. That's you know, that's like nearly up to a fifth of the population. And when you, not that I want to go on to other topics specifically, but when you look at the employment rate, they're like 8 times less chance of being employed or going into employment, which is massive. So there's a massive gap for people to reach their potential and to have the experiences that they want. So and it was interesting actually, even looking into that, lots of people use the term, you know, neurodiverse, but that does include neurotypical, you know, those who are neurotypical as well. So I think when we're sort of aiming at those who aren't neurotypical, the neurodivergent word kind of fits a bit better. You know, like anything, nothing's perfect. But, you know, I think for me, and I wrote about it in one of the newsletters for Nurture Bear, about my own experiences with ASD and stuff, you know, just finding words that fit or, you know, like what actually resonated with me was really important as well. So it is really key that we just, you know, that we do what doulas do, right? We listen and, you know, respond to what people are telling us.
And I suppose coming from my background as a coach, where I am very interested in trauma and the impact of people's life experiences on how they show up and behave in their day-to-day lives, I suppose that kind of plays in too. And, you know, whether neurodiversity is necessarily something you're born with or whether that something emerges over time given life events or whatever. So it's really interesting. And I think you're right. It's thinking about how as doulas do we show up and support people wherever they are at, whatever life experiences they've had, whatever conditions or anything that they have in their lives. Yeah. So you talked a little bit before about some of the challenges that may face people who are neurodivergent. What, I mean, this the theme of this season of the podcast is what I wish people knew. And I think this is just, I mean, this episode is lighting me up, because I think what I'm hearing from you both is that there are some basic things that would be really good for doulas, those in the birth world, those in the perinatal world, to understand when it comes to interacting with neurodiverse people. So can you tell me a little bit more about that?
I think for me, is like, again, it's something we don't do anyway or shouldn't be doing, but it's that not assuming, you know. Again, I can only talk about my experience a bit, but there's the assumption that, you know, when I've been through things that, but I'm just fine and I'm just coping, or I can just financially, you know, it's a struggle all the time for lots of people that are neurodivergent. So not assuming that they're okay or not okay can be make a massive difference, just sort of even checking in and being that safe space for somebody. Again, it goes back to things that, you know, hopefully as doulas we're doing anyway, but you know, I've spoken about it a lot before, like Lives and Nurture Birth and wherever else, that you need to feel safe with the people. So actually building that connection, you know, so they do feel safe to say what they need to say or not. You know, not everybody is going to want to say, oh yeah, hi, I'm whatever, and I have X, Y, and Z. And they shouldn't have to, right? Yeah. So they shouldn't need to. So it's just making sure that we're open and not bringing our own biases or assumptions with us when we meet people, because you don't know what's going on behind people's masks. And you know, lots of neurodivergent people you know, mask really, really well, which doesn't help, but it is
a mask. I was gonna say that's come up. Now correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've heard a number of times is that it's often harder to diagnose women with neurodivergent tendencies than men, for some reason, that women are tend to be very good at masking or creating coping strategies. You know, when I say coping strategies, I mean ways of dealing with things.
Masters of masking. And I've got a statistic on that. So there was a study in just last year, 2022, that determined that when we're looking at females, that by the age of 18, 80% of autistic women have not been diagnosed. So late diagnosis is a huge issue.
Right.
And there's a huge kind of explosion at the moment of awareness, particularly with social media. People are sharing their experiences, and a lot of people are being diagnosed in their 30s, 40s, beyond. And it's kind of like a real opportunity for self-awareness, but there's with that comes some grief when they're reflecting on their past and how things were and how they struggled and weren't supported. But yeah, that's huge. And learning, you know, unfortunately it's another example of where the patriarchy has screwed us over, because medical research on, we're using autism as an example here, has been so focused on the male presentation that we still know so little about the female side and, you know, the non-binary kind of side as well. So I think that's key, particularly when we're looking at supporting people through pregnancy. I think that's something to be very mindful of, that a lot of people may not even know themselves that neurodivergence is at play, and may not be able to communicate what their needs are, and that can be challenging.
Really challenging.
So, and actually, go on, Sarah.
And actually, you know, I remember like years ago, it's like, you know, autism's primarily a male thing, but they just figured that, again, it goes back to stereotypes. It's like, because women are more emotional, women are more like fussy about how things are kept, and it's all these stereotypes that are so damaging. You know, it's like, it's not just, so yeah, things are very, like, very skewed. So just to be clear, you know, when it comes to people maybe showing certain traits, and I know people aren't going to do it anyway, but you know, we're not going ahead and saying, oh, I think in our heads they might be you know, because, you know, stuff, you know, I know that stuff can get carried away, or people can get, I think, overexcited or over like, I want to help, really want to help. I think this might be an issue, therefore.
Yeah.
So we just have to be really mindful.
Yeah.
Maybe about, you know, what we're assuming again. Because I started with assumptions and I've come back to assumptions.
Yeah. Well, doulas are not diagnosticians, are we? I mean, I was talking to somebody about tongue tie the other day, and how as doulas, we're not going to be going and saying to a parent, your baby's got a posterior tongue tie. Just like we're not going to be going up to a pregnant parent and saying, I think you're You're the best. So you were talking just then, and it really brought to mind. So Sam, you and I talk a lot on the doula courses about the representation of birth in the media and the whole perinatal period in the media, and how, you know, if you think about the typical kind of Hollywood representation of birth, it's going to be bright lights and screaming and ambulances and, you know, waters breaking dramatically on the floor. I'm just wondering what the representation of neurodivergence is in the media, and how true a representation or how helpful that can be for people or not. I'm thinking, you know, of the obvious one that comes to my mind is Rain Man, which was, you know, this beautiful film, late '80s, early '90s, Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman, and
And it was a great exploration of what that might look like, and again, expectations and what you think about other people. And it, I think, like anything, it can have its positives and negatives, and it's sort of light and dark. You know, it brought that to the fore, which was great. But equally, we were talking about this earlier, how, you know, we can devalue the experiences people are going through because they're not what's seen as severe, whatever that means, or they're lucky because they're mild on, like, whatever spectrum it is, you know. So, yeah, the media, I don't think as a whole the media is great at showing, like, that sort of any form of different births other than an overdramatic one. And certainly, certainly the fear it must bring up, because when people are seeing those bright lights and loud noises and lots of people, for those who do have like hypersensitivities or don't like different hospitals or different settings because they don't meet them, or, you know, lots of people around or being touched, or the sounds, the light, anything, all of these things are going to be like triggering, activating people all over the place. So it can work in both ways, like anything, you know. I don't think it's best put out in the media.
I'm just really wondering the kind of the stories that exist in the population around neurodiversity. So
it is the Rain Man's
exactly. And when we're thinking about something like ADHD you mentioned earlier, what do people, like, so often people tell themselves that, you know, perhaps ADHD people can't concentrate, or that they are lazy, or, you know, avoidant, whatever.
It's so true. I think it is very unhelpful the way, I think there are stereotypes, and they tend to be male stereotypes again. I think, you know, certainly before I had a child with ADHD, if I conjured up that image, it would be of a little boy at school who was very hyperactive and unable to sit in his seat, or unable to stay focused on anything, running around, difficult to teach. And, you know, actually my daughter can be very focused at times, very almost overly focused in the way that it's then difficult to take her attention elsewhere. So again, I think, you know, and then the Rain Man example, that has really hampered our understanding of the way different genders present, but just the diversity in general of neurodivergence. And we, you know, often we all still think about the spectrum as being this line from sort of low functioning to high functioning. And, you know, we know a lot more about it now, and we think more in terms of a kind of colored wheel and everybody being on that wheel and having different strengths and different challenges. And, but to sort of get that level of understanding, you know, I don't think that's present in the kind of media. I think it takes research and understanding, you know, if you find yourself asking those questions. And certainly when you're the parent of a neurodivergent child, it really delays the process, unfortunately, because a lot of people don't have the awareness, and you go to somebody and say, I'm a bit concerned about this, or, you know, do you understand what's happening here? And they say, oh, but, you know, your child makes eye contact. So so it's fine. And then you go, you get distracted because you think, well, it's fine. And actually, you know, like a lot of topics in the birth world, you have to go and do your own like high level research, because the people that often you're looking to for those answers and support don't have the awareness and understanding.
I was going to come on to ask you about that. You know, what's been your experience in the sort of medical world around neurodivergence, particularly relating to birth and the perinatal period?
Yeah.
Do you know, like, I don't see a lot of that at all. And I know there's snippets from what people have told me of awareness around how midwives approach them or what their visits look like. But, you know, I think sadly, due to the state of the NHS as it is and the terrible conditions they're working in and the time restraints everybody's under, I just don't think that level of care. What people need is that one-to-one care. It doesn't matter where you are on, like, on the planet and what needs you have. They should be met on an individualized sort of care basis, but that's just not happening. And I do think that these sort of more, I say hidden disabilities, I don't even like calling them a disability, because I don't think they are a disability. It's just a different way of looking at things. But they're just not seen, or really, you know, if I sort of come to a midwife or appointment and say, oh, ask a question, and they tell me, and then I walk away and think, oh my God, I've forgotten it. And then I'm going to have to ring them again. And then I feel like I'm a bother. But, and then I might not might like making phone calls, for example, to chase people because I don't like phone calls, or so then the whole thing comes a massive cascade of stress that you just don't. So for some people, they just don't go to antenatals because it's too stressful, or if a bit stupid for asking again, you know. So I don't see a lot of it. And I'm not saying it's out there, because I know there's lots of midwives and care professionals working really hard to make things as good as they can. But in a system that's now quite generalized in its approach, it's really, really difficult. It's really difficult.
And I can imagine that that's where... Go on, Victoria.
I was going to say, this is where I get super excited about the role of the doula again.
Just what I was going to say. I feel like that's where doulas could play a massive part.
I mean, we love doulas for everybody. Yeah, of course. But for me, I get like that. That was that moment as well when I really started looking into neurodivergent kind of challenges. I was like, oh my God, a doula would be so helpful in all of these. You know, it's that continuous support, individualized care, really getting time to get to know you and what your needs are.
Yeah.
The feeling of safety from just developing a rapport with the same person rather than a different person every time. Somebody who might be able to communicate on your behalf if you need it at times, or can help in ways, you know, if communication is difficult. So we talk in the workshop a bit about that, and delayed auditory processing often being an issue. Having someone who can come to your appointments with you and you can debrief with afterwards. These are just some of like the small examples where doula care could make such a big difference to a neurodivergent person's experience.
Yeah, that was absolutely what was coming to my mind in, you know, in a less than perfect medical world at the moment, where there is so much pressure on midwives, obstetricians, where there is a lack of time and availability, and you know, as has been highlighted so many times, continuity of care is essential, and it's missing in the majority of cases. The idea that somebody navigating pregnancy could reach out, find somebody that they really connect and relate with, be able to share with, open up, talk about their individual needs, their desires, their dreams, their hopes, their expectations, be supported to find information or a pathway that feels right for them, and to be able to advocate for themselves or have someone do that for them, that just feels like no brainer. Well, I mean, you know, it feels like no brainer to me, for anyone to have a doula at any point.
Yeah,
just in any of these situations where there are, you know, more circumstances to consider, just brilliant. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, it's often the the sort of the unsung hero of the doula world, but the postnatal period. Is there anything to bear in mind, particularly you mentioned right at the start that often anxiety is more of an issue in the postnatal postpartum period?
I mean, unfortunately, anxiety is often an issue for neurodivergent people because of just that trying to live and fit into this neurotypical world that wasn't quite designed for the person who isn't neurotypical, and that causes huge amounts of stress and anxiety. But I think perinatally, there can be a lot going on. I think often people, particularly, and again, trying not to lump everyone into same box, but particularly people with ASD, so autism spectrum disorder, will talk about kind of a need for control and routine being very important to them. And they may well have had coping mechanisms around those themes in life before parenthood. And then a baby comes along and a lot of that's just thrown out the window because the baby didn't get the memo that everyone needs to have routines and control to feel better. That can be really difficult. Also, from a sensory point of view, babies are hugely sensory beings. There's a lot of sensory output from a baby, and that can feel really overwhelming. A lot of people who want to breastfeed find that challenging from a sensory point of view as well. It's a very sensory experience. And just if you're somebody who kind of has tactile sensitivities, having a baby on you for that much of the time is challenging as well.
You feel touched out.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think most people do, but it can be taken to sort of a different level.
That makes so much sense to me when you're talking about people with ASD and the need for control and, you know, the drive for routine, perhaps. That makes such perfect sense.
Yeah. And you know what? I remember someone saying to me once, you just need to just let it go, Sam, and just relax and chill out. And I was like, I will chill out once I've done all these things, because I can't chill out until these things are done. Yeah. So for me, it was really important. I couldn't just sit around with a messy hat. I wish I could. I really wish I could, but I can't. And actually, you know, the state, we were talking about this yesterday, the state of my house often is reflected in the state of my mind, actually. You know, how well I am emotionally, how my anxiety is sort of faring. So for me, that was really key, actually. I was like, I know you're telling me to rest, but I actually can't. So, you know, it's just about managing all of that. Again, expectations about what we tell people, like when we show up at their house, it can be really easy for us to be overcaring. What I mean is to be like, no, sit down, don't do this. I can do this for you. But again, that control back, some people want to do the things.
Yeah.
So it's about managing what that looks like for the person. So they do get the rest they need when they need it, right?
Yeah.
Whilst the integrity of them doing what they need to do as well. So
I really hear that. And I mean, I'm reminded of a story that you tell often on doula courses, of working with someone postnatally who absolutely wanted and needed to cook. And that, you know, it's so easy to assume, isn't it, that as a postnatal doula that we might go in and be all caring and blousy and make lovely nutritious meals for people. But actually, in this situation, it was the new mother who needed and wanted to cook and wanted you to sit on the sofa holding the baby. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that brings me on, I suppose, to the courses and what we, you know, our approaches to neurodivergence within Nurturing Birth and on courses and what you observe when you're teaching Sam, particularly, or mentoring Victoria as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. Facilitating. I think just for me is that heightened awareness that, you know, I want people to show up as they are. And so beautiful thing about the facilitation is we evolve all the time, right? Mm-hmm. We have conversations. I think even not getting into the nitty gritty of what's going on within the course, the fact that we as a team can get together afterward and say what's working, what's not working, things we might need to tweak, what we've noticed. And the nice thing actually about the online teaching, which I really love, is the fact that because there's two facilitators, you know, one might be facilitating certain parts and the other one is watching just to see, observe how people have, like, were their facial expressions just shifting, how the position is, you know, just to see if there's any changes in energy. And, you know, when you and I, Sophie, started out, we were like, don't know how this is going to transfer. Like, does oxytocin travel through screens? It does.
Yeah. You know, it really does.
Yeah. And you can pick up on all of that. You know, you can pick up on all of that by just watching people and getting a feel. You know, I'll drop people a little message, you know, how are you doing? Is this okay for you? Like, if you need anything, just checking in and make it a bit more personalized. So, you know, and being open about the fact that the courses are changing all the time and we don't know everything. We're never going to know. As doulas we weren't, as course providers, as mentors, it's just about exploring and being open to conversation. So that's what I love about, you know, teams and doing that, actually facilitating, is I know that we can explore things as we need, and it's not restrictive.
Yeah. And I think from an accessibility point of view, the fact that it is possible, this does work so well online, is amazing. It makes it so much more accessible for a lot of neurodivergent people who wouldn't feel comfortable coming into a room of strangers and, you know, talking about you know, potentially some vulnerable experiences themselves, or listening to others. You know, it's being able to do this online just gives people that little bit more sort of protection from some of that. And then, you know, being able to stay in your own environment where you feel safe and make your cups of tea and things like that. But I think in terms of like the course content, I think, yeah, like Sam says, the fact that it evolves and it's so adapted and to the people who are there and what's being shared is key. And just, you know, I think we talk about individualized care like so much in the courses, but just being mindful of there's never going to be a one approach for everybody. And a good example of that is when we talk about open questions. So we often talk about how great open questions are, because if you ask an open question to you know, for example, a doula client, and they that gives them the ability to sort of delve a bit deeper and explore things for themselves and share with you what they need to share. But being mindful that actually an open question, potentially for somebody who is neurodivergent, has communication issues, is really sort of like paralyzing, and it's very, you need more guidance on what you might be looking for in terms of an answer, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
Yes, I think just always kind of having that in the background of the conversation, like, this could be really useful, but it might not be useful for everybody.
What was coming up for me was that, you know, going back to what you were saying about the typical notion that we have about the ADHD kid. And what I've heard over the years is how challenging education was for a lot of people. So I have a lot of inquiry phone calls with people, and, you know, there'll often be this kind of, well, you mentioned it at the beginning, actually, that the sort of shame voice comes up of, I'm dyslexic, or, I've got ADHD. and so really thinking about, you know, how do we adapt our spaces, the ways in which we teach, I say that in inverted commas, facilitate, so that we are able to make a space as accessible and easy for people to be in, be that online or in person. We had somebody on a course in person just recently who's ADHD, who's very, you know, once she'd opened up and expressed that, we were able to have a conversation with her about what her needs were. And she said, I will need to get up and move around every so often. And at lunchtime, I will need to go off for a walk, and this, that, and the other. And actually, you know, she just watching her evolve over those few days, you just seeing her gain confidence in that space and own her needs was just, it was so, it was really lovely to see, and knowing then that, you know, what she was going to be able to take on to her doula clients. Yeah. Just, it makes my heart sing of knowing that all of those doulas out there are going to be able to work with different people and have a different impact. It's really exciting.
And I think that's what it comes down to, asking people what they need, because it will be different for different people. And it would be, you know, the word assumption's going to come up again, but it would not be wise of us to make assumptions, like we should deliver this course this way so it's ADHD friendly, we should deliver this course this way so it's dyslexia friendly. Like, I think that would be too broad. I think it is about seeing people, their individual needs. And just, you know, as I completely feel the Nurturing Birth courses do, allow people to feel safe enough so that they can share those needs in the first place and make it clear how open you are to adapting to whatever works for them.
I feel like we could carry on talking for hours, and I know that the two of you have got a huge amount that you're doing with the rest of your day.
Drinking a lot of tea.
And obviously, being doulas, we're going to drink a lot of tea. Yeah. So I'm going to draw it to a close there. How can people find out more about what you're doing? Because this is so exciting.
At the moment, and hopefully there will be a website in the not too distant future, but at the moment, the best thing to do is on Instagram, go to @neurodivergentbirth, which is all one word. And if you're interested, there's a podcast. So if you're interested in potentially participating in that podcast, you can get in touch with us via there. You can also email neurodivergentbirth@gmail.com. And come and take part in the conversation, because Sam and I are not, you know, we have personal lived experience and we're doulas, but this is very much a collaborative space for people to come and share ideas and experiences so that we work together to help improve support for neurodivergent people perinatally.
Brilliant. I can't wait to see how this all evolves. It's really exciting. Anything else you wanted to say, Sam, before we close?
Yes, we are running workshops. So they are huge. It might evolve or change, but at the moment they're going to be for 3 hours over 2 days. You'll find that on the Neurodivergent Birth Instagram page. The dates that are going to be running throughout the year. So that would be lovely. Yeah. Lovely and to see people on them.
They're specifically designed for birth workers. So doulas, hypnobirthing instructors, yoga teachers, midwives. We'd love some student midwives on there. Anybody working in that world or interested in learning more.
Great. Sounds fantastic. Oh, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for coming and joining me. I will be sharing your contact details in the show notes. Any questions, don't hesitate to come back to us too. Sending you lots of love. Thanks so much, Victoria and Sam. See you soon. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you've got any questions or any feedback, don't hesitate to come back to us. It's info@nurturingbirth.co.uk. And do follow us on social media @nurturing_birth on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook as well. Please do give us a review if you've enjoyed this episode. We are on Spotify, we're on Apple, and we would love to hear your thoughts about any future episodes you'd like to hear. So do get in touch. Thanks for listening. Bye.